Everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma, and with me
is Christina Kaslanka.
Hello, Christina. How are you?
Hello. With you is Christina Kaslanka.
With me.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I got it right this time.
Yeah.
The part that got edited out is the part where I just kind of left it hanging
or
and didn't say.
Or was it edited out?
Don't you do this to me.
I'll edit it out.
I assume things get edited out, but I realize I don't.
You don't actually listen back and you don't know what happens.
Do you know how tired I am of hearing my own voice?
You know how tired I am of hearing your voice?
I realized as soon as I did that, I was like, oh no. I set you up for that
so
one.
So much.
So anyway, well, it's like I edit all the videos, you know, you just, the podcast, like I'm more of an introverted person than I feel
Are
like the
you?
Internet would let on. Oh yeah.
I don't know about that.
I need my recharge time.
I feel like we all do, but okay. That's the story for another time.
Well, I'll tell you what today's story is. We'll just jump right into it because it's a great interview. We've got Mark Schoolmeesters, who is he's a producer, he's an artist, he's a songwriter. And it was great. I actually got to meet Mark at Anchor Hymns, and we just had some great conversations, and I was like, I love this guy. And so when Revere, a new project for Revere came out, I think Gilbert...
Nenlohi talked about
it. Yes, yep. Right, yep. And... so we talked about that a little bit, but now like we kind of dig more into it with Mark. And when they gave me a list of like, you can talk to any of these people. And I was like, oh, Mark, for sure. Cause it's going to be a great conversation. The only thing about Mark is he tries to interview you back. So like you're interviewing him and then he'll give an answer. He'll be like, I mean, but like, what do you think about that? He got me once. And then I was like, no more.
Hey, no, no who's more. Running this interview?
Yes. Yes. I am interviewing you. Nobody cares what I think. But he is fantastic. It's a great conversation. And so we're talking about Revere and reverential worship. And so without further ado, Mark Schoolmeesters. Mark Schoolmeesters, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, man. Great to be here with you.
Well, it is good to see you again. We've gotten to spend some time together and it's always a joy. So when Noah reached out and was like, hey, do you want to talk to anybody from Revere? And gave me the list. And I was like, yeah, I already know who. Just send them my way. So.
It's so great.
So thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, let's start off and just jump right in, because you are always a man about the world. You are flying this way and that way, but I know Revere is a big part of your world. Maybe tell us a little bit about where Revere is at right now.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Revere is something that started right before COVID, actually. 2 weeks before the world locked down, we gathered a bunch of creatives and worship leaders and songwriters together. And we had been writing over the course of the previous year or two before. And we did a live recording 2 weeks before the world shut down. And Revere is at this spot right now where we've since released that project, came through the whole, you know, season that our world has been in over the last couple of years. And we're just about to release another full-length project that we recorded live in Nashville back in October of 2022. And so we're at this really special time, I think, in the season of the church, but also in the season of what we're about at Revere. So Revere began with this idea of if you look over the last even 50 years of songs in the church, and we've come through these different seasons of, we came out of songs that were about, statements about God. A mighty bulwark is our God. They're impersonal statements about a very personal but also a big God. And then we moved into the 70s, 80s, 90s, where the songs became like, I love you, Lord, and they became very personal. And then you get into the 2000s, and then it became about the narrative of worship became what our songs were about. It was like, Lord, I'm going to worship you with all that I've got. And you know, almost like if you thought I was worshiping you with passion yesterday, wait till I bring my offering tomorrow. There's a little bit of this sense of what we've moved into in the church is about intensity. And so Revere at its core is really just about saying, let's get back to the reverential fear of the Lord, which is not being afraid of God, but it's a recognition of who God is and a fear of being without God. And so wanting to posture ourselves in that place. So in a very long answer to your question, Revere is at a really special place right now because I think we've stumbled into something that is resonating with people. And it's not really about what it is. It's just about pointing the focus back on Jesus.
So how do you, So how do you think we got here? You know, you kind of pointed out like, here's, this was what was happening. And then this is what was happening. And then this is what was happening. And it almost seems like in a sense, like you were saying, we were making like faith statements about God, like who God is, proclamations. And it's like, now moving in this more reverential space, like how did we get through those? And like, where do you see those changes kind of happening?
I mean, Jason, I think at its core, it's subtle 1-degree shifts. Nobody wakes up one morning and says, I'm going to abandon everything that I believe in and walk out on my faith or walk out on my wife. Or, you know what I mean? It doesn't happen that way. It's subtle, small 1-degree shifts. It's little compromise after little compromise. Malcolm Duplessis, one of my dear friends, mentors, who helped kind of forge this whole Revere path, says it's about the numbing of the conscience. It's when we hear and sense like, ooh, that just doesn't feel quite right in my conscience, in my spirit, but we just kind of numb that. And then as we do that over and over and over. And so it's 1-degree shifts, but it's also, we're fighting against our human nature, right? Because our human nature is to make everything innately about me. I want to be the center of my world. Like my kids used to watch this movie, Finding Nemo. And the joke in that movie is that you have these seagulls that they say the word that my children, I did not have to teach, right? Mine. And so there is a nature in us that wants to put ourselves at the center of the narrative, to put ourselves at the center of our universe. And so part of it is just, we're fighting uphill against our human nature. And so I think our hope is that this becomes a little bit of a reset, not to say that there's anything wrong with songs that talk about us, but that they're put in perspective and balanced out with us recognizing some of the songs that we sing really are talking a lot more about us than they are about who God is. And so wanting to reset that. And so it's not something that I think anybody woke up and said, let's just do this. I think it's just been a little bit of an adjustment over time, one day after another, where, you know, we hear another cool song and we go, ooh, I want to write another song that kind of goes that direction. And one song leads to another, and we almost kind of become what, because of what becomes cool or popular in our church culture, we can accidentally pull each other a little bit off course in that process as well.
I feel like the contradiction with God, like kind of one of my biggest things that always breaks my brain is we have this almighty, all-powerful, universe-creating God that somehow still knows how many hairs are on our head. Yeah. Still knew us before we were in the womb. And how do you manage to keep, do you even, can you combine those two? Because in a lot of ways it's like, okay, how do you bring reverence without creating somewhat of a wall?
Yeah.
And something that becomes that feels disconnected and impersonal. Like how do those things go together for you?
I mean, it's a great question.
You figured it out, right?
I'll let you know. I mean, I will say this. I was at we did a Revere writing camp with a small group of writers in California just about 3 weeks ago, and spent a lot of time wrestling with that topic and almost wanting to write songs that held those two things in tension, that Jesus was fully God and fully man. And so tapping into his humanity at the same time as tapping into his divinity. And that God is just, but he's also loving. And so there's, you know, it's part of the thing that my 14-year-old son drives him crazy is that he's like, I can't get my head around God. I wish I could understand. I'm like, welcome to the club, bud. That's part of the fact that his ways are higher, his thoughts are far above, all those things. It's like, we want to wrap our head around. And I think our instinct is to want to reduce God to our ability to comprehend. So we reduce God's magnificence to something that we can fathom. And so we take some of the awe out in our effort to comprehend and to wrap our minds around. And so I think there's a place for us to simply say, hey, look, this is who you are. This is beyond me. But it's also beyond me to understand how he would, like you said, breathe out stars or create the universe. And yet he still cares about the things that I went through and am processing and feeling in our family today. And that doesn't feel like it makes sense because they feel like they're at odds. Like God's either big and royal and far off in the sky, or he's just my buddy and he's just here with me. And he's like, no, I just am. I'm in both of those places equally and significantly. And so I don't know. I mean, that's, for me, that's it. I mean, what about for you? How do you manage the tension of who he is? Sorry to turn the question back around on you.
Yeah. Wait, I'm the one doing the interview here. We're here to talk. We're here to listen to you. We don't need to hear what I have to say. I do though.
My bad.
Just to briefly answer that, I think one thing I find for myself is in my own worship, in my own, you know, in my quiet times and throughout my day, and the way I tend to write is much more open and like an invitation into watching and waiting. And like, I don't want to make God in my image, right? Like my image is, it's wholly inadequate.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to like put on God all the things that like, I think he should be. It's kind of like, no, he is these things. He is still loving. He is still present. Cause the big God makes way more sense to me than personal God. Mm. But I know the personal God. It's just a weird, it's just a weird thing. So I don't know. It's interesting what you say about kind of songs going through these like seasons, because really when we, as worship leaders, when we're building worship sets, you know, and we're putting songs together, it's like, I'm trying to be intentional about like, this leads to this, which leads to this, like, there's actually a journey there going where we're trying to grab, like we one song can't do it all, right? We need a reverential song, and then we also need an intimate song, and we need kind of all the things in between. So,
yeah. Well, and to that point, it's almost part of the tension of how we got here too, is that we want to experience something and then we want to relive it. And so we can put God in a box of, oh, this is how it happened last Sunday. And so we're like, let's recreate that moment. All the while we're forgetting that God is a living, breathing being. And so he's like always, I think he always errs on the side of, dude, I would love to do something new. But you figured out that when Shout to the Lord happened, you're like, that song moves with the key change. And so you're like, every time it's the exact same thing. I love Shout to the Lord. I got nothing wrong with it. That was a song of my childhood. It's the first song that came to mind. But to the point of it was, when I sang that the first time, something moved in me. And then I had an expectation that I would have that same experience recreated again and again and again. And so if we're not careful, our songs become our God. Our songs become our idol, because we're more interested in the pursuit of what that song does for us than we are the God that we're going to worship. And in its proper place, a song is just a vehicle, and God is the destination, and the song is there to help us get to the destination. But so often we get stuck sightseeing at the car and going like, oh, this is a really cool car, man. This is super cool. And you're like, all the while, there's a Grand Canyon right in front of us that we're missing. And he's going, hey, I'd love to do something new. I'd love to reveal a new part of my nature and character to you, if you are willing to not just repeat and regurgitate the same songs and the same words, but to dig for something fresh that doesn't have to be for a corporate setting. It could just be a personal thing. And so I think there's an element of a desire in us to want to get back to that and say, we don't know everything. And we actually think we know a whole lot less than we thought we did. And that's a place that we want to be. God, would you do something new? And we'll just, like you said, it's like that posture of just saying, I'm just showing up and I'm open. I love how you said that. It's like, I don't have pretense or expectation of what's going to happen. I just know I'm here and God says he's here. So if God is here, then I'll just experience what goodness he wants to do in my life today.
Totally. So how are you? So, you know, you have that piece of things, right? And then you have, you know, you have this group of musicians and artists that you brought together, and you're creating this beautiful music. Tell me a little bit about what guides that direction for you, and what is that sounding like? What do reverential songs sound like?
It's so fascinating right now, Jason, because it's all over the world. So on this project, there are songs in Portuguese, there are songs in Spanish, there are songs in English. We just got back from a time in Sweden with people from a number of nations around Europe. And what it's sounding like is a lot less Western and a lot more world. And so it's tapping into saying, we've seen for a long time that the church has been driven by a few different nations. You've got Australia was a big leader for a while. The UK was a big leader for a while. The US has been a big leader for a while. But there are things that God is doing in other parts of the world that are equally as valuable, but have maybe not been equally as prominent. And so it's sounding like us discovering that there are people all over the world who speak different languages, who this same desire is kind of bubbling up inside of them. And so when we were in Sweden a few months ago, there was a song that four of us got together and wrote. There was Junior is from Africa and he lives in the UK. You had someone from Sweden, someone from the US, and someone from Ireland. And we wrote this song that we called, it was called The Lord Our God. And we had this conversation about how we function in most of our world as though he is the Lord my God. Mm-hmm. But when he's the Lord our God, I don't take ownership or possession of him, but I give him to you, and we all have access. And so there's something that happens when you get outside of your bubble, get outside of your culture, get outside of your blinders and even your biases, and talk with someone else who has a very different framework of the world, but an equal respect for the God that we serve. And it causes you to kind of slow down your pace and slow your mouth down and just be still and recognize, wow, I don't really have the corner on any market. I'm just grateful to be here. And so what does it sound like? It's starting to sound, I think, a lot more humble. It's starting to sound a lot more contrite and awestruck and grateful and also boisterous. You know, you've got people singing in different languages, and I don't know exactly the words they're singing, but I know the heart that they're singing with, and it's moving me. And, you know, music is, I think, beautiful because it is the universal language. People speak different languages, but everybody can experience a song. And I think that's part of the reason that God uses it. It's not the only form of worship, but it is a form, and it is a universal language that people across cultures, across language barriers, can listen to a song in a language they don't understand, but they understand something that song is communicating. And so it's really been a fun journey to get to be a part of experiencing that and seeing, oh, wow, God's doing something on the other side of the world that's mind-blowing. And it doesn't have to look like the commercial success that we've defined as success in our Western church culture. You know, like we say, oh, well, this song is for the church. It's like, well, some songs are actually just for your church. You and I have had this conversation before.
You're right.
It's like,
Mike, you're speaking my language right now.
We need to redefine the definition of success of a song. It's not whether it's a top CCLI song or not. The definition is it honest? Is it true? Is it pure of heart? And is it available for the people that it's there to meet with and to speak to? And if that's a group of 30 people, then that song is as beautiful, if not more beautiful and more powerful and more profound than a song that's, you know, chart topping on some metric that we've established in our human construct. And so I want to get back to saying, I want to be a part of songs that are meaningful, and not everybody's going to get it because it's not going to probably be the thing that sizzles and is like, ooh, that's the new cool thing. But it's the thing that I think is going to last, that 50 years from now, we're going to look back and go, those songs have stood the test of time. I mean, that's what I want to be about, Jason, is I want to be a part of projects and songs and working with people that are not chasing a momentary success, but the ones that you go, this feels like a song we're going to sing in heaven one day. That's the thing that's, you know, as a songwriter that I'm going, I want to be a part of pursuing that. I don't want to be flippant with my words. I want to be full of faith with my words and recognizing God's up to a lot. And I have very little perspective on how big and broad he actually is and what he's doing.
Yeah, just obedience and following that. That's the thing I love. You know, the thing I think is really interesting about what you're saying is, if I have it, like, here's the thing, I don't speak Swedish, you know, I very poorly speak Spanish, you know, I can get by at the taco truck, but that's about as far as that goes. And then, yeah. You know, like there's, but I can hear, like, the thing that art does for us, right, is it communicates something that speaks deeper to us. It's like, there's a reason why we sing. There is a reason why we paint and draw and all these things. It's like, these things communicate something that words can't always communicate. You know, even in like songwriting, you're trying to like, I want to say it differently, or I want to be able to like grab this new idea. And ultimately it's like, no, I'm trying to do something that's connecting with people, right? And there's, when you talk about really an unknowable God, a God that you cannot understand or comprehend, but you can hear people worshiping God in another language. And like, I can't understand those words, but I can understand that music and I can hear that heart, and that's going to communicate something differently than maybe the words even communicate.
For sure. For sure. Well, if you look at Genesis 1, right? In the beginning, God created. We have a God who is a creative being. That's in his nature, to create and recreate all the time. And so it doesn't surprise me that we're moved, as we're made in God's image, that we're moved by that process of creativity, in that we're constantly in that pursuit of going, ooh, this is good. Let's go make another thing. Ooh, that's also very good. You know, that's how we feel when we write a song. We're like, oh, this is my favorite one. I feel like that was God in creation. Like, ooh, trees, birds, this is really cool. Let's do something else. Ooh, you know what I mean? Like, so there's an element of, there is an expressive heart that I think it's okay to tap into. And like you're saying, art has its place in that, as long as it doesn't become the thing that we now bow down to. It allows us to tap into the bigger picture of, there's a pretty, pretty amazing God behind this creative world that we live in.
Right. Right. So what has you excited moving forward? You said you were just at a retreat where you guys were, you know, writing again and talking about like, okay, like how do you continue? Because I think the thing that's interesting about this, right, is you have this worldwide thing. And like you said, you have, you know, Australia and, you know, all the English speaking countries mm-hmm. basically are the ones that have propagated music and kind of learned how to do it, you know, like, for lack of a better term, like, okay, well, we have the machine in place to be able to share this and to make it available, right? Mm-hmm. Versus somebody who's just sitting at a small church somewhere mm-hmm. playing a song, right? How do you guys, like, you're obviously you're grabbing this, you're lifting this up, you're working towards this. How do you shepherd that to be something that people can hear and respond to, without kind of taking away what it is? And I don't even know if that's something, an issue that you guys run into. You might be like, oh, that's not a problem at all. But
I'm just
curious how those multicultural elements all kind of play together.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, as you ask that question, I immediately think about how the instinct is in every other culture is to want to do it the way that it's been done in the industry. And so as we're saying, no, let's not do it industry wise, like that approach, everybody who's in a country that hasn't been like doing it on this scale is going like, no, but that's how it's done. So that's what we emulate. And we are constantly having to push against and say, not push against, but to push pause and say, we don't want this to be human ingenuity. And I'm reminded of, what did it say about Jesus? It said that he did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped or to be leveraged. And that word leverage is something that we probably in the industry and the worship as a genre, we use a lot. We're like, oh, let's leverage this. Oh, let's use it to build the church or to resource the local church. That's a word of like, it's a leveraging word. It's like, it's about doing something great, but it's also about putting myself in a position of influence as well. And so we're constantly fighting against that and going, no, this is not the next kind of American Idol. Let's have this be the next big thing. This is like, let's do it because this is the right thing. And this is a heart thing. And so, you know, that's a real tension always. It's what ends up happening. So if we do a writing camp, we'll end up having, you know, we'll have some exercises. We'll say, let's focus on songs that don't can involve us in the narrative at all. And it's really hard, just as an exercise. I'd encourage a songwriter, go and try to write a song and don't say God is something and this is what it does for me. Cause that's the instinct, is like to talk about the kickback and the benefit for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But to write a song fully and solely about the subject matter of who God is, his character, his nature, his personhood, and do it without talking about the implications and the benefits that it has for you. And so it's maybe it's as much to say as it's an experiment in helping us reset and reframe how we lead people, how we write songs, how we interact with communities in a church setting. That if we can have 1 degree, I don't expect this is going to all change overnight. And if it does, then it probably is going to, what's going to happen is that everybody's going to go, oh, this is the next cool thing. And we're going to have an influx of songs that are about reverence, but they're going to be still in the form of like intense, powerful, like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah. Cause God's so good. And look what he did for me because he's so good. You know, it's like, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think it's less about it's equal parts about the subject matter and equal parts about the disposition and the posture of the carrier, the cost, mm-hmm. the carrier of the heart person, the heart of the person who's carrying the song. And so we're learning, bro. We're making lots of mistakes and we're having to have grace with people because, you know, when you start working with multiple cultures and languages, you run into things where we've learned over this process a little bit that a lot of the metaphors that we use in English don't have an equal in other languages. So Spanish, for example, doesn't have a lot of flowery, colorful, metaphoric language. It's kind of literal. It just says what it is. Mm. Portuguese, it will take the space of 3 or 4 lines to say the equivalent of what we can say in 1 line in English. And so when we're writing songs in 2 languages at the same time, you end up kind of going, oh, so you need like 9 verses to say what we said in 4 lines. Or, you know what I mean? There's all these different things that you're learning, that nuance about different cultures. And we have a thing in the world where we are great at translating songs, but the songs sound like a translation. So the framing of how a phrase meters and paces and even rhyme scheme works doesn't feel like it actually sounds like it was written in the language. It sounds like a translation, and you can hear that. I can't speak yeah. Portuguese, but I'll sit in a writing session while we're translating a song, and I'm like, that's it, because I hear your vowel sounds match and your meter of how you pace the phrase matches, and vice versa when it's written in Portuguese, to then take it to English and go, oh, that's not the common way that we would rhythmically say that. But now how do I honor that original language right. with what I'm going to say and then say it in English? And what it does is that tension, it seems to unlock things in us that we get outside of some of the boxes that we have and some of the ways that we've just like, oh, well, this is what the rhymes should sound like. And this is what a phrase feels like. And so some of the, even the rhythmic senses of things are completely different. And you're stumbling into things that you're like, I never would have come up with that in my American English speaking box. But when you put me in a room with someone from Brazil and someone from Sweden, and we're writing in 3 languages simultaneously, we don't take easy because we're like, oh, that was a great idea. That's the first idea. You wrestle and you go, well, that doesn't work in this language. Okay, well, what would work in that language? Oh, that's an interesting thought. Okay, how would I say that in this language? Oh, but that doesn't work in this language. And you're going back and forth and you're spending 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 hours and days sometimes with a song that normally we'd go, oh, let's just power through it and be done with it and turn it in and be done. And so there's something really beautiful that unlocks when you get together with somebody who sees the world different and dig in and really explore, how do we express this heart to God who gave us all these languages and all of these tools of a song and worship, and put it together in a way that can honor and serve people in multiple contexts all across the world.
So what are some of your favorite lines that have come out that you're just like, man, this one went in a direction I did not expect it to go? Like, what are some, can you give us some examples of some of those things that yeah. came out of that process?
So there's the first one that comes to mind. When COVID first hit, we did the very first international like songwriting camp we did was with people from Brazil. So people in Brazil primarily speak Portuguese, as they say it. And I was paired with an artist named Gabriel Guedes, who lives in Brazil. And we wrote a song together. It's called Glory Hallelujah. And he had this a little bit of an idea for the verse. And it's a song that tells the story of the return of Christ. But the way that he sang it When I he gave me the literal over Zoom, this was during COVID. So we're over Zoom and we're doing this thing. And it's me, he speaks just a little bit of English and we have a translator with us. And so we're working the three of us together on this. And so as he told me, they're telling me literal, what it translated to was, I see the signs are coming. The times are coming. The signs are everywhere. The time's about to come. It's this, the trumpet will blow. It's one of these types of things, like the triumphant return of Christ. But what we ended up with in Portuguese is beautiful. And what we ended up with in English, we wrote it in both languages at the same time that day. And it was striking because it was, it's not anything like revolutionary, like mind blowing, but the way that the meter of it, the way that the lyric phrases, it is, it's, it, it grabs you in a different way. And then the chorus just says, we'll sing glory, 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 hallelujah, praise forever. We will sing together. The trumpet will blow. The church of Christ will rise. It's just this beautiful picture. And so some of them are like that, where they're not like mind-blowing new lyrical things, but they're put together in a way that you go, this couldn't have just happened in a Nashville writing session. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that have some of the most beautiful poetry. There's one that we wrote in Sweden just a couple months ago that we wrote it in Portuguese, English, and Swedish at the same time. And it's, you know, you just stumble into these things and you go, I don't even care if this song goes anywhere. In going back to our conversation earlier, like redefining success, that was enough for me to have that afternoon with two new friends and for us to have a time worshiping together in a very small, hot room in the middle of Stockholm, Sweden. And that was it. That's my moment with that song. And if it never has another moment than that, then I was changed because I encountered Jesus in a new way through that experience. And so I think that's my hope. I think that's our hope, is that we would, maybe these songs would be in such a way that people would go, I get to have a new experience, but it doesn't encourage people to stay in that experience. Mm-hmm. But to continue to move into the fact that God is continuing to do something new and something fresh. And we get to be a part of that. Man, what a privilege it is to get to worship a God who doesn't get old, who doesn't get dull, who doesn't get predictable, who's constantly up to something new and going, yeah, I want to be at work in your life. And I want to give reminders that you can have an interaction with me that doesn't feel like it's just regurgitated yesterday, but it can be new and fresh today. So those are a couple that come to mind. You know, there's plenty of others, but you know, there's, this project is full. I think there's 17 songs on this project that's coming out. It's called The Mystery of Christ.
That's almost up there, almost as high as Benjamin Hastings' album.
Well, we set out, I think, to record 12 songs. And wouldn't you know, what happened the night of the recording is someone would just continue to sing something and a new song would pop out. Or it was like, oh, there's this old spiritual we used to sing growing up. I'm just reminded of it. Let's sing a chorus of it together. And so there's all these different things of coming together. And we had, you know, we did a song called Behold. We recorded it in English and in Swedish and in Spanish, excuse me, and in Portuguese. And to take the time and have the Portuguese singing people teach people who don't speak Portuguese how to sing in that language, there was a dignifying thing that took place in people's hearts, like going, oh yeah, I want to honor another language and another culture, and I want to honor it well. And so it's one thing after another, man. It's like just getting to be a part of stuff that pushes us outside of the boxes that we get stuck in, I think is pretty special.
Well, all I want to do now is just go listen to the record. So where can we find it?
Man.
What's it called? Where can we find it? How do we listen? Give me all the details.
Yeah, I'll tell you the things. I mean, you already know what I'm going to say. It's the artist, primary artist is Revere, but there are, I think there's probably 14 or 15 other artists that are on it as well. And so Revere, the album is called The Mystery of Christ. And so there will be, it's on, you know, the Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, all that kind of stuff. And then on YouTube, there also will be some video, because it was a live video and audio recording that was done in October of 2022 in Nashville. And so we gathered 100 and some people in this little black box and just had a time of worship and taught people new songs. And it was beautiful because there was everything from big triumphant songs to almost like hymn-like songs. And so, you know what? I have one more story to tell you. So I think my favorite song on the project is a song called Holy Hallelujah. And it was written, there's four different people that wrote that song, but multiple cultures. And it's kind of the story of just this picture of who God is and the kind of the salvation story of who Christ is, that he would be creator, savior, king, and reigning Lord, that kind of that idea. But it feels, it's got these big kind of dark chords. And so it's Phantom of the Opera-esque. And it was a moment where even in that experience where Becca Folks from the UK, who sang the song and carried the song, at one point she just kind of started singing over people in the room. And it was, you'll have to listen to it. I mean, it's like a 12-minute version of the song, but it's an experience from start to finish. And man, it's going to be special to be able to be a part of encouraging people. There's no shortage of new songs right now, Jason. You know this. Like, everybody's putting out new music all the time. And so, man, if someone's interested and willing to go listen, I promise it won't be a waste of your time. And we are grateful if you do choose to listen, and hope that it would encourage you not to look at, wow, look at Revere, or look at this artist, or look at that person, but that you would walk away with your eyes focused and fixed on Jesus. And that's the heart of it, is let's get back to eyes on Jesus, and eyes off of us, eyes off the artist, eyes off the carrier, eyes off the ministry, the brand, the equipment, the gear, all that stuff. Let's let that stuff be in its proper placement, and let's just get focused on Jesus and let that be it, and let that be enough.
Yeah, I love that invitation. And I think it speaks so, like, our heart and the way that we listen to music and the way that we approach music. Like, it's funny, like, if you're in the music world at all, right, you're hearing all kinds of things all the time, and people want to show you stuff, and you're like, okay, listen to this. And you immediately go into just like critique mode, and do I like this, or do I not like this? Or is this like, or like trying to, like, the brain does this thing where it tries to simplify and like take the quickest shortcut to understanding what something is, right? So you see it and you're like, this is this. Okay. And then you move on. And I think the way that you're describing it, like, we can't understand God that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can really understand worship that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And so being able to approach it and go, okay, well, I'm going to put this video on, and I'm just going to let this music do to me what it's doing.
Yeah.
Rather than go in and go, like, which singer do I like? Okay, which song is the one that I'm going to use? Mm-hmm. I wonder what, you know, like, and just approach it and just experience. Like, I think that's so life-giving and so beautiful and so much more, more open and worshipful, because it lets God kind of use the thing to work on us rather than us come in and go, like, here's the definition. Okay, I got that.
Yeah.
I love that it's called the mystery of Christ. I think that's like, anybody who tells me it's not a mystery, I just don't believe. I'm like, you're a liar.
Right.
You're selling me snake oil. If you can tell me you can explain God, I will tell you that I don't believe you.
Yep.
And we'll walk along.
And you obviously have not, you've cut it too short and too simple. Well, and the other part, one other platform thing is on YouTube, we have a 24/7 playlist. There's a channel that just kind of plays through all of these songs, and the songs that have been previously recorded. There've been a number of recordings and captures of just times of worship. And we'll do, we do the full produced thing, but then we also do this thing called unscripted, where at the end of the night, we literally just gather everybody around the piano and we sing through a few songs together. And there's kind of a little bit of direction, but it just kind of happens what happens. And it's become one of my favorite things, is just being able to sing with people, and you just stumble into stuff. You're like, oh, we're singing. So, you know, there's like Morning Into Dancing, some of these old songs that we used to sing. And so it's a way that you can take it, like you said, and just go, I'm gonna put that on and just let it become the soundtrack for my day. Or my time of worship and prayer. And as I'm going to read the Bible today, I'm just going to have this on and just listen. And there's going to be different languages that come up. And I'm reminded that God is bigger than just my culture and my country, that God is at work in other cultures and other countries. And so, man, I hope that that is encouraging to somebody. And for the person who's like feeling like, man, I feel that I'm supposed to make a big impact for God. I guess I would say one thing to you today. I don't know why I've got this on my heart today to share, but I think the more that I put energy into doing something for God, the more that I'm learning and relearning that the greatest thing I can do for God is just be with God and get to know God. And the opportunities, although they're beautiful and fun and exciting and exhilarating, I much prefer to step into something because God flung the door wide open than because I was trying to hustle and strive and trying to, you know, get my song heard by the right person. And that was my story, was I was the guy who I did that for years. And then God was like, stop striving and be faithful where I plant you. And then I went into this 10-year season of obscurity and doing nothing. And I just kind of let it all die. And I think if I'm not willing to let it die, I don't think that I'm ready to live with it yet. And so there's an element of like, okay, sometimes we have to be willing to lay it down. And for us, it gets really murky when what we carry is meant to be an offering, because our offering quickly becomes our idol. And then I don't want to have my relationship with God minimized to just something that I can sell or put out or send to somebody else. And so I think to the person who's growing in their artistry, who's growing in their love for music, I want to encourage you today to grow in your love of Jesus and let your love for worship music be an overflow of that rather than the main thing of that. And when we keep it in that order, I think that's when God's able to do something special. So I've seen that, you know, in you, Jason, my friend, like watching you wrestle through some of your journey of going, okay, what do I do? How do I do these songs? How do I navigate this? And as I've watched you navigate that over getting to know you this last year, the thing that struck me is how you are so wanting to not let the thing become the thing.
Man, I really do. It's funny the things that, like when I think back to being at Anchor Hymns this last, you know, the last time, one of my favorite conversations was sitting with you at that barbecue place and just talking about how it's so frustrating that there's things that we have to learn in this really deep way that we can't like manufacture learning, right? We can't be like, oh, I can't manufacture maturity. I can't manufacture humility. Yeah. Like these are things that we have to be humbled and we have to grow and we need time and all those things. And so it's just, I think it's really awesome that that you are creating music and ministry that is coming from that space of like, I've learned these things and now I don't want to just run away, but yeah. I want to bring these back and go like, yeah, just, I want to share them with you. And it's probably gonna take you a long time to learn it, but you need to have voices that do that. And so very excited about everything that you're creating and always so happy to, always great to talk with you.
Okay. So great conversation. Love Mark. I wanted to ask you about, you know, he talks about going from, you know, like how worship music has transitioned kind of generationally, like it's gone from proclamation and then it became more, you know, personal, you know, I love you, Lord, that sort of thing. And, you know, then it became more, about like our relationship to God. And now they're trying to move it, you know, they're pushing it towards like, well, we need to be, you know, we need to revere God. We need to have reverence and all those things. Have you seen those changes? Like, do you recognize those? Do you feel like those are true? Or do you feel like that's kind of a perspective from maybe someone within the industry? Or do you see that like in your own worship leading career, for lack of a better term?
I absolutely see it in my own life. I would say that I am drawn to leading songs that are truly like high, like praise and adoration and singing to Jesus and about him instead of about us and like what we're going through. Actually, Bethany works at Worship Artistry.
Who's actually like right there.
Who's
you
right
can't
there.
See her. She's probably answering one of your questions.
She did a little wave. You don't
right
see,
now.
But she did just wave.
She's like the woman behind the people.
Yes, yeah. The woman behind us people.
Yeah.
But she, her and her family attended my church a few weeks ago, and we were talking about it afterwards, and something that she had mentioned that, or asked me a question of, did you, like, all of your worship set, all the songs that you led were very, like, vertical, like, were very much about, just about Jesus and his name and exalting him. Like, was that intentional? Mm-hmm. And my answer was, it wasn't intentional per se for that set. Like, I just, you know, chose the songs that I felt we needed to do. But thinking back, like, I've realized that I'm so much more drawn to leading worship that isn't about me, mm-hmm. that isn't about, like, I feel this way, like, I, like, less introspective and more singing about his goodness, his faithfulness, his majesty, his beauty, his glory, like, all of that. Cause then that actually, like, it is in the Bible, in Revelation, the elders, the angels, the creatures, everyone responds once they look at Jesus, mm-hmm. once they look at his awe, once they have that reverence, that's when they respond in worship.
Right.
And so I feel the same way with us leading worship here on earth. Like, as worship leaders, if we can point to Jesus and or point to Jesus, yes, but to sing songs directly to him and about him and, like, and paint almost this picture of, like, this is the God that we're singing to. Like, I can't help but assume that everyone in the congregation will respond in worship or be led into an atmosphere where they have to respond because that's all they can do.
Right. Like, Oswald Chambers talks about that a lot, mm-hmm. about how it's just like, if you've seen Jesus, like, there is only a way to respond. Like, you have to respond in this
worship.
Way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we do talk about, you know, we talk a lot about things like identity and, mm-hmm. you know, who am I and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I always think about it from the standpoint of, like, if I see God, like, that shapes who I am. Mm-hmm. Like, if I get to behold his majesty or just the little, like, sliver. I mean, like, Mark and I were talking about how it's just like anybody who says they just mm-hmm. understand God, I'm like, you're lying. Like, he's unattainable, mm-hmm. ununderstandable. But then there's this paradox where he's like, but I know how many hairs are around your head, mm-hmm. and I know what's happening today, and I see those things all throughout my life. But that shapes me rather than trying to shape God into my image and, like, well, this is what I want God to be.
Yep.
It's like, I don't get to do that. Like, I have to accept who God is and who he shows me and then, you know, hopefully share that and respond to that. And I think as leaders, like, that's what we're really trying. Like, if we're doing it right, mm-hmm. we're placing that perspective on Jesus. I love what Matt Redman said, you know, last time where he's just like, how do you sing holy, holy, holy in a me, you know, society. But that's what's so revolutionary and counterculture about Jesus. One of the many things.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it's not about us. It's like allowing us to be shaped by him. And so I love that approach, and especially the international angle of, like, here we're doing one song in Portuguese and another song mm-hmm. in Swedish and all that. I mean, you're at a Russian church, mm-hmm. so you sing in multiple languages. Are there certain things that you find are easier to say in Russian than there are in English and vice versa?
Well, I've said this before where back in an episode long ago, if you want to find it, where we talk about this.
Good
and
luck.
Good luck. but I stay away from leading songs with a lot of words because we do have a multicultural demographic where I have to, like, I try to do each song in Russian and English. Mm-hmm. And if there's a song with a lot of words, it's really hard to translate, and it's much more rare that there's a translation for it. Mm-hmm. So I actually find that I end up singing a lot of songs that are just simply holy, 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 or that, because even if it's not translated, I can translate it because mm-hmm. that's an easy enough word that I can translate, obviously. But even if someone doesn't speak that language, they can still sing along mm-hmm. and there's still unity. So even if my grandma, she doesn't speak very good English, she can sing holy and she knows what that means. Mm-hmm. And then if we're singing holy in Russian is Svyatoy, if we're just singing Svyatoy, the American members in our church can also sing that. Like, that's easy enough for mm-hmm. them to say and for us to all, like, unite as
that's
one
awesome.
And singing.
I love
like,
it.
And it's simple. Like, it's not about me. It's not like, I find that those songs are actually really hard to sing about. Those are really hard to translate, but there are certain words that are kind of universal, you know, like, yeah. Or hallelujah, like that. You don't need a translation for alleluia. Like, that's just, I feel like, I'm pretty sure it's just alleluia in every language.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and I think, right. Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's awesome. Well, if you want to check out Revere, you can. It's streaming now. By the time this comes out, it will be streaming. I'm in the spot right now where I'm like, I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah, I really want to listen to it.
But you can, because by the time you hear this, you can. So go check it out. I will have already probably been listening to a lot. You can also check out their YouTube channel where you can just watch their live.
Yeah, they have a live stream. Like,
which, and they just kind of loop it. There's just like play it. And they're
very cool.
So well done. Like, they sound amazing. Mm-hmm. They look amazing. They're, you can just put that on and just like let that inform your life for the day. Mm-hmm. And it's a win. So go check that out. And if you want to learn some songs that are in reverence to God and want to worship him with skill and confidence, you can check out Worship Artistry, where we have over 600 song tutorials of all kinds of worship songs, all kinds of topics, all throughout. We kind of recognize that there's no one thing to do. And so being able to kind of build a bigger picture, we have this library and you can learn those songs and your team can own them, can really play from the heart, play with their hands, and really enjoy our amazing God. So go check that out. You can try it for free.
And we'll see you next time.